Welcome to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. I'm June Grosso. Every day we bring you insight and analysis into the most important legal news of the day. You can find more episodes of the Bloomberg Law Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and on Bloomberg.com/podcasts. Is there a federal case to be made against tech giants for violating antitrust laws? Attorney General Jeff Sessions has said he'll meet with state attorneys general later this month to discuss how tech firms may be hurting competition and intentionally stifling the free exchange of ideas. Joining me is Bloomberg Intelligence senior litigation analyst Jennifer Ree. Jen, let's begin with the recent attacks on the dominance of tech companies coming from a lot of different directions.
Well, you know, the most recent attack, and this has been going for a while now, the most recent attack was President Trump. You know, he was angered by a concept that he thought that these entities were suppressing conservative content. And therefore, when somebody searched, looked at YouTube or went into Google and searched, went to Twitter, all that was coming up was bad news about him and nothing that was good. And he sort of turned that into an antitrust problem. Now, he has consistently talked about these entities having antitrust problems due to their bigness, due to other reasons. But in this case, he said, you know, they have a very antitrust situation, is exactly what he said to Bloomberg News, actually. And he said that his administration was going to do something about it. Following that, following in the footsteps, taking his lead, we saw that a Washington, D.C. conservative public interest organization called Freedom Watch filed a complaint saying exactly what President Trump has said, that Apple, Google, Twitter, and Facebook had conspired to suppress conservative content and that this is a violation of the antitrust laws.
The Justice Department said it's going to convene a meeting of state attorneys general to discuss whether big tech is hurting competition. Isn't that the job of the Justice Department's antitrust division?
Well, technically it is, but you know, there is so much overlapping antitrust enforcement within the United States framework, and it is actually in the purview of the state attorneys general as well. I thought that that was sort of an interesting thing, and I was a little bit confused by it, because technically what usually happens is that the Department of Justice confers with the Federal Trade Commission, which also has antitrust enforcement responsibilities, and they decide between the two of them which one, if either, will open an investigation if there's some concern that a company might be violating the antitrust laws. And oftentimes at the state attorneys general, one or more will join in that and sort of piggyback on the efforts of the federal government to do the same. So the idea that Jeff Sessions would go out and convene this meeting is a little bit odd. Missouri has already opened an investigation some time ago of possible violations of Missouri's antitrust and privacy and consumer laws. And it's possible that other attorneys general have as well, and that, you know, we don't know that these are confidential.
Now, the head of the Justice Department's antitrust division said that just because somebody is big does not mean they've violated the laws, nor should we condemn them because they've succeeded. Though he expressed support for the Justice Department meeting with the state AGs, is his statement right on as far as the law is concerned?
Yes, it is. The Supreme Court, this is Supreme Court precedent he's talking about, and it's been consistent over about the last 30 years. The Supreme Court has held that just simply obtaining a monopoly position, being in a monopoly position, and even exerting monopoly power in certain ways doesn't violate the law. What violates the law is obtaining, extending, or maintaining that monopoly by unreasonable, unfair methods meant to exclude or harm your competitors. So the fact is, it's conduct that violates antitrust law, not size. So a company just sitting around that's obtained power or dominance or large size because of efficiency, because of a desirable product, consumer preferences, you know, however it was that it obtained that scale, doesn't necessarily violate the antitrust laws if its conduct has been fair in the marketplace.
That sounds like Amazon, doesn't it?
Well, you know, absolutely.
Asking for an opinion there, sorry.
You know, the thing is, June, the problem here is that this is all incredibly fact-based. You know, what I just explained, that it's about their conduct and it's about what they're doing. Most of us don't know the nitty-gritty of how they're conducting their business on a day-to-day basis and the kinds of contracts that they're getting into and how they're dealing with their competitors. So none of us really can look as an outside observer and say, oh, well, they're big and dominant and they're doing all sorts of things and violating the antitrust laws. What it takes is an intensive, sometimes years-long investigation. And I think that's why the Assistant Attorney General for Antitrust statement and his support of those meetings aren't inconsistent, because the idea that big alone doesn't violate the antitrust laws is our precedent. But they do need to investigate to understand whether there could be some conduct that is harming competitors, dampening innovation, maintaining that dominant position.
I want to go for a moment to the AT&T Time Warner case, which you know well, because it seems as if you're looking to break up the power of some of these tech giants, you wouldn't allow something like the AT&T Time Warner merger to take effect.
Well, it's interesting you should say that, because it shows a little bit of the conflict that we sometimes have between our antitrust enforcers and the judicial branch, because the Department of Justice can enforce and investigate antitrust violations and mergers that might violate antitrust laws, but they can't stop those mergers without a judge and without going to trial on it, which is what happened. The Department of Justice absolutely felt that that merger would have an anti-competitive effect, was bad for consumers and violated antitrust laws, but they were unable to prove that in court, and the district court judge ruled against them. And that's the extent of the Department of Justice's power beyond appealing, which they've done. So it remains to be seen what happens there.
The judge in that case, I found this really interesting. Judge Leon cited a dearth of modern judicial precedent when it comes to vertical mergers like the AT&T Time Warner. And also Tim Wu, who is a professor at the Columbia Law School, said antitrust law is stuck in the 1980s. Before the Time Warner case, when was the last time there was a big antitrust case over vertical mergers?
Well, it was in the 1970s. It was 1977, and in fact, the government lost that case in court. And I think the reason for that, first, I think there is one misconception. I think when AT&T Time Warner enforcement action came, there was a misconception that vertical mergers just fly through in their antitrust review, and that's not really the case. There have been vertical mergers in the past June that have had to agree to a consent order, usually behavioral remedies, sometimes divestitures, and there have been vertical deals that have been blocked. The Justice Department or the Federal Trade Commission threatened to sue, and the companies abandoned the merger. It never got to court. So that's part of the reason that we don't have a lot of decisions. Now, most of the mergers challenged are horizontal and not vertical. And the reason for that is because, one, in a vertical deal, an industry is not becoming further concentrated. And that's the main harm that we worry about. And the second reason is that vertical deals, vertical integration, tends to have a lot more pro-competitive effect, pro-competitive efficiencies than a horizontal one does. And oftentimes, an enforcer will look at that and say, well, this deal is going to ultimately do more good then it will do harm. And therefore, we're going to go ahead and let it get through. And this happens. But there has been enforcement of vertical deals. And I don't want it to be said that this is the only vertical deal that's been challenged since 1977. It's simply the only one that's gone to court since 1977.
So do you agree that antitrust law is stuck in the 1980s, or do you disagree?
I disagree. Now, what I do agree with is that the antitrust tends to be stodgy, and enforcement tends to be a little bit stodgy and slow to catch up with an industry, to stay with the technological changes. I think it's very difficult because they do need to think about what might happen in a market in the future, and that's a difficult thing to do for somebody who's not an expert in the industry that they're looking at. And so, therefore, there tends to be sticking with our past decisions and looking at what we've done in the past and doing it again, defining the market the same way, sort of applying the same analysis or decisions to this merger that we did to a similar merger 3 or 4 years ago. But I don't necessarily think it's stuck in the 1980s. I think that it has developed a lot since the 1970s, become more sophisticated. There's been a lot more economic thinking that's applied to antitrust. It just may be that it is lagging behind the way our own economy has been changing.
So let's now talk about that lawsuit. As you mentioned, Apple, Facebook, Google, and Twitter are being sued by a conservative public interest organization. What's at stake here?
You know, it's so hard to say what's at stake given how vague this complaint is. What this entity claims is that they've lost over $1 billion in profits due to this conspiracy to suppress conservative content. I guess the way it goes is that Freedom Watch and others like Freedom Watch, it is a class action, so they're bringing it on behalf of others like themselves, have YouTube channels or have, you know, Twitter feeds that, because they're suppressed, causes them to lose subscribers. And losing subscribers then means losing revenue. So they do translate it into dollars, but they don't put a lot of meat around that allegation. They don't really put a lot of meat around any of their allegations, to be honest. So I don't really see a material impact coming out of this case. I think the very first problem with it even putting aside this problem of proving that somehow they've lost $1 million of revenue from this conduct, which they'd have to prove, I think they'll have a lot of difficulty proving that there was any kind of an antitrust conspiracy. It requires an agreement and proving that these companies agreed to all suppress conservative content.
Is the defense going to be, this is all scientific, we have an algorithm and that's how we do this?
Absolutely. This is what I understand, that they rely on algorithms. I'm sure that's what the defense will be. I'm sure that Freedom Watch will come up with some reason why those algorithms have been tweaked in some way to suppress conservative content. And all of that will have to be proven. But even if there is an algorithm that's tweaked to suppress conservative content, even if there's an affirmative effort to do that, it's not an antitrust defense unless they prove that there was an agreement for all of them to do that together. They rely on what they say is parallel conduct, that they all did it. But the problem is that competitors often watch what their rivals do and copy what they do. And as long as they do that on their own unilaterally, without agreeing with the competitor to do it, it's okay.
So a motion to dismiss might take care of this lawsuit.
I actually think that it will, because I just think that the complaint is too bare. When a conspiracy complaint, plaintiffs who are alleging a conspiracy bring that complaint and they say it's parallel conduct, they generally add pages and pages in their complaint of what's called plus factors, what the courts say are needed to suggest that this wasn't just parallel conduct, that it was actually an agreement to all behave this way. And there really isn't anything here. So I believe that there's a good chance that this will get dismissed early with a motion to dismiss. It's possible a judge will say, well, here are all the deficiencies, I'll dismiss it without prejudice and you can try again. But even if they try again, I don't think they'll be able to sustain this case.
That's Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Litigation Analyst Jennifer Ree. Thanks for listening to the Bloomberg Law Podcast. You can subscribe and listen to the show on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, and on Bloomberg.com/podcasts. I'm June Grosso. This is Bloomberg.